And again, good morning, Las Vegas. Good morning, Southern Nevada. Lou Epton back with you. Hour number two, and our very special guest this morning, Jordan Maxwell. Again, good morning, Jordan.
Good morning to you.
We were going to, and let's do it, and then we'll go and get some calls from the phone. But right now, let's take a look at some of the symbolism that lives within the nation's capital.
Okay, before I do that, one more thing I want to throw at you.
Okay.
Just listening to the news just now. All of the media hype about this guy named Mason who has been put to death. The media on all the news programs this morning are hearing about it. It's just so incongruous. It's so totally insane that they are making such a big to-do over the putting to death of a criminal who, but all of the people, the normal, regular people who live in this country who are murdered every day, men, women, and children, the media doesn't hype that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't say anything about that. What about the little old lady who had a, you know, who was murdered last night here in Los Angeles in East L.A.? Nobody knows about her. Nobody cares. But because a criminal is going to go to his just desserts, it's a big media event. I'm telling you, what we call media is nothing more than a manipulation of people behind the scenes and who have got this thing down to a science. They're manipulating us.
Yes, they are.
Anyway, one other thing in relation to the war I wanted to bring out, but I just saw one of my notes I wanted to bring out, is that the Red Cross is able to go behind enemy lines to negotiate the release of prisoners. And every time there's any hot spot in the world pops up, the Red Cross is always there.
Mm-hmm.
But the Red Cross comes from the International Red Cross, which is founded in England, and it's the Red Cross of St. George on the British Union Jack flag. So the reason why the Red Cross is able to go behind enemy lines and negotiate is because they're part of the conspiracy. These organizations who purport themselves to be humanitarian organizations are nothing more than secret societies and fraternal orders of knighthood coming out of the Middle Ages, out of England, and now out of America. They're manipulating, using fronts for the conspirators behind the scenes.
And yet, wouldn't you say that they are doing a certain amount of good?
Yeah, absolutely, they're doing a certain amount of good, just as the mafia does. They give money to the poor folks' home or the crippled children's home. But I'm not concerned about the good, the little bit of good they're doing. I'm concerned about who runs this thing from behind the scenes.
Okay, and that's where it is.
And let's get back to Washington, D.C.
All right.
Now, if you go back to the dollar bill, the pyramid on the dollar bill, America is referred to by secret societies as the new Egypt. The reason why is because everything in our country is based on Egyptian mysticism and Egyptian symbols. Even the Mississippi River is like the Nile, in that we have on the Nile, we have on the river cities like Cincinnati, Memphis. All of these different city names on the Mississippi are the same that are on the Nile River in Egypt.
Now, wait a moment. On the Nile River in Egypt, are you inferring that there is a St. Louis, that there is a Cincinnati?
Yeah.
Or am I confused?
As a matter of fact, St. Louis was the man, according to the occult Freemasonic reference works, who gave us, or who was instrumental in giving us, what is called the Royal Arch degree of Freemasonry. And that's why in St. Louis we have the Royal Arch. And, of course, when you understand that the first 13 colonies on each side is six and one in the middle, the one in the middle was Pennsylvania. It was called the Keystone State because in any royal arch, there is a keystone in the middle, and the keystone is what holds the royal arch degree of Freemasonry together, so that's why we had 13 colonies, and Pennsylvania is the keystone state. So anyway, where was I? Oh, Egypt, the pyramid was referred to and is understood to be by the ancient Egyptians the mountain of God, or God's holy mountain. And that concept runs through the ancient world, through even prior to Egypt. There were holy mountains in the ancient world. Of course, we know Mount Fuji in Japan and Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa. And then, of course, in Greek, there's Mount Olympus. The Romans also said that that the Caesars rule from God's holy mountain in Rome. And they call that mountain Capitoline Hill. And it was said that the Caesars went up to rule on the hill. And that's why today, even in America, we say that the government's up on the hill, Capitoline Hill. It has to do with God's holy mountain. And the symbols around Washington, if you see, which I have, a color picture of a flight over Washington D.C. looking down on the Capitol area. You will see the two main streets converge at the top into a triangle, into a pyramid. And then you have the Washington Monument, the River Styx, or the Long Waterway, and then you have the Capitol Building. The waterway is, of course, the concept of the waters of life. And the waters of life, of course, comes from being baptized. You go into the water and be baptized and come out and born again into waters of life. That goes back to Egypt, and, of course, it comes from your mother breaking, you coming out of your mother being submerged in water. And so the waterway in Washington symbolizes life in you coming out of the water, and the Washington Monument is the male phallic symbol. It's the male, and it looks down through the waters of life to the Oval Office, which is the female, the oval, and that's where the generative power of life comes from, is from the Oval Office with the Washington Monument as the male. And the symbols of, like, for instance, the satanic symbol of the pentagram, or the five-pointed star, is used in devil worship and has been used in occult circles for thousands of years. The five-pointed star is the pentagram, and if you take the arms off a five-pointed star, in the middle you have a pentagon. That's why the United States has a pentagon. According to the ancient Babylonian Sumerians, you would draw a pentagon or a five-pointed pentagram on the earth and in the direction of the north, or the North Star, to gain power in war. That's come down to us today in our symbolism in America. It's just enormous amounts of symbolism. I mean, we have, our country is ruled from something called the White House. It's not black or brown. It's White House. As England is referred to, I mean, her government is referred to as White Hall. That's why we have a Hall of Records, Juvenile Hall. The judge rules from the hall. Because of the White Hall and the White House, like the Town Hall or the Hall of Records, mm-hmm. the Lodge Hall, and of course Jehovah's Witnesses have the Kingdom Hall. It all has to do with the Great Hall of the Initiates in Egypt. So, the symbolism is all over Washington, D.C. The implications are horrendous, and all of the lunacy that we see going on, this is one thing I really want to get clear to your audience, all of the incredible lunacy, destructiveness, the outrageousness that's going on in front of our eyes in Washington, D.C. is not by chance. It is all organized. It's ordo ab chao, order out of chaos. These people in positions of power in this government are very astute. They're not stupid. You do not get to be president of the United States by being an idiot. These people are very smart. They know what they're doing. George Washington even said, and I have a copy of the letter right here in front of me. I'll read just a few passages from it. I'm not even going to read it. I'll paraphrase it.
Okay.
Where George Washington said that he was aware of the Illuminati and the occult Freemasonic orders operating in this country called Jacobinism. And on page 519, George Washington goes on to say that it was not his view, and it is not my view. Also, I agree that not all Freemasons are guilty of this kind of evil. We're not talking about your father and your grandfather and the Masonic Lodge. We're talking about an occult order of Freemasonry that is very powerful, that works behind the scenes of governments and religions and institutions throughout the world. But George Washington, here on page 519, said that he believed that the founder, or the instruments employed to found the Democratic Party and the United States, had the object in mind of separating the people from their government, and that was too evident to be questioned. He goes on to explain how the Democratic Party was set up by the Illuminati, Freemason occult orders in Europe, set up in this country purposely to divide the people from their government, so that you could send your representative to Washington and he would supposedly represent you, but what you don't know is that he's already a member of the fraternal orders, and you can't do anything about it. That's why in this country we love to talk about how we can elect. We have the right to elect, but we don't have the right to select. That's the difference. And you don't even get to be selected to go to Washington unless you already know and are a part of something. And if you don't, if you get in there and you're not a part of this fraternal order, you'll either be run out of town, made a fool out of, or even shot if necessary. So I'm saying that the government we have in this country is a criminal society organized and directed behind the scenes by some of the world's most greatest and most bloodthirstiest criminals. And until such time as the people wake up to find out that Hollywood, motion pictures, television, radio, all kinds of instruments of manipulation have been used to exploit our ignorance, and we wake up and find out we've been had serious.
All right. Let's do a timeout. When we come back, would you be interested in talking to some of the listeners?
I think so.
Getting their questions and their comments. Okay, so there we are, everyone. Lewiston here, our guest this morning, Mr. Jordan Maxwell. Okay, at 17 minutes after the hour of 10, let me thank everyone for their extreme patience this morning in regards to calling through. Yes, Jordan?
One thing I wanted to throw in here in relation to the pyramid on the dollar bill. The word pyramid comes from pyramid. Mid, of course, means middle, and pyra, it means fire. Pyramid, or pyramid, means fire in the middle. And the pyramid, that's why in all public buildings and restaurants, the men's restroom will always have a triangle, while the woman's has a circle. The pyramid is fire in the middle, which goes back to the old Egyptian concept of the sexual regeneration, is the fire in the middle of the human body, the fire in the middle, the pyramid. And something else I wanted to say is that in France, the Illuminati Freemasons in France, their name in France was called the Encyclopedia Dictionnaire. That's why we have an encyclopedia and a dictionary is from the occult Freemasons of France. Our Statue of Liberty was given to us by the occult Freemasons, the Knights of the Temple of Freemasonry in France. The Statue of Liberty, of course, holds the Torch of Enlightenment, which was the torch on the back of the dime. Our dime has the torch. The
right.
Torch is the Torch of Enlightenment, or the Torch of Prometheus, which is the fire from God, intellectual or spiritual fire or light. It's fascinating when you get into all of these symbols and what they mean.
I was just going to say that.
It's just fascinating.
Okay.
So now we'll take a few calls.
Let's see who's waiting and see if they're on the line. Good morning. Are you there? Okay, and this one, good morning.
Hi, Lou.
Yes, good morning. Go ahead, you're on the air with Jordan Maxwell.
Mr. Maxwell.
Yes, sir.
I've been listening to what you've been saying, and in your 35 years of research, I'm really surprised that you have not come to the understanding that these symbols that you're talking about that are supposedly being used by secret societies to do a quote number on individuals or groups naturally occur in nature, to the universe.
No, I totally agree with that. As I said before, these symbols and emblems go back into the most ancient world that we can possibly have any writings about. The Sumerians, the Akkadian Babylonians, the Phoenicians, all of the ancient people of the ancient world. You can trace all of these emblems and symbols back to the most ancient of times. What I am saying is that these emblems and symbols have been perfected, especially with the first coming of the first 12 dynasties of Egypt. They perfected these symbols to actually put them into use in a very important religio-political way to manipulate people throughout the world, even in the Egyptian Empire, later into the Roman and coming into the English Empire. We are using ancient symbols, and of course there's only so many geometric symbols that can be made. So I understand, believe me, I understand that these symbols are not new, that they're very ancient. I'm just talking about the way that they're being used on us today.
Now let's take the pyramid in Egypt. Now the pyramid is fueled, or let's say based around, the golden mean ratio.
Yes.
That exists throughout all of the universe. In fact, you look at our universe, it opens up in a spiral according to the Fibonacci series of numbers. And that's what the pyramid is designed around. Now, I want you to know that the golden mean ratio is the most harmonious, symbol or concept that man has ever even dreamed up.
I totally agree with you.
Okay, so to think that the pyramid, or the pyramid on the dollar, so to speak, is something of a manipulative, evil nature that is to do somebody in, it's quite the opposite. Now, your number 13, I want to talk about that, because when you said, well, Christ had 12 disciples...
No, I'm sorry, that's the way England and America has used it.
Okay.
The 13 is a much older number, as I said.
Okay, and the number 13, according to very, very ancient Tarot, before the Egyptians, back to the Chaldeans...
Yes.
Relates to the sign of Aries. So if we have 13 of anything on a dollar bill, it means that we are a new society thinking of new thoughts, maybe separating from the colonies, and maybe wanting to do something new and revolutionary.
All right, on that call, we're going to have to thank you, and we're going to move along.
Okay.
Did you want to make a comment on that?
Yes, I do have a comment. Yes. What he says is true. And in Isaiah 19:19 in the Old Testament, let me quote this because I knew this would come up. In Isaiah 19:19 in the Old Testament, God is saying to the prophet Isaiah, "In that day shall there be an altar to the Lord in the midst of the land of Egypt, comma, and a pillar at the border thereof to the Lord, and it shall be for a sign and for a witness unto the Lord of hosts in the land of Egypt." Now, when you go back over that, it says that there shall be an altar to the Lord in the midst of the land of Egypt. Midst meaning middle, comma, and a pillar at the border. It was not until the late 1800s that we discovered that it was talking about one thing, because in Isaiah 19:20, the following sentence, it says, "And it shall be for a sign." So the pillar at the border and the altar in the middle is one and the same thing. And if you go actually according to a surveyor's geological survey and you cut Egypt down the middle, which it was in the ancient world, Egypt was divided between Upper and Lower Egypt, and they had two pharaohs. The middle of Egypt is the border. And so it's talking about something that is in the midst of the land of Egypt and a pillar at the border. I believe that is the pyramid, because the pyramid of Giza sits right in the middle on the border between north and south. And in relation to that, I have done my homework on this subject. What he said is true, but it has far bigger implications. Jesus is three times in the New Testament referred to as the chief cornerstone the builders rejected. Chief cornerstone is a Greek word which means a triangle on a pyramid. It's called a pyramidon. So when Jesus is referred to as a chief cornerstone the builders rejected, we're talking about the triangle on a pyramid. Now, how does that fit into the pyramid and the eye on the pyramid? Because the scripture is very plain that that eye on the pyramid is the chief cornerstone, and the Bible says that's Jesus. So I am aware of what he is saying. All I'm saying is that there is a far, far bigger picture involved in this than just the golden mean. Of course, we understand all of that, and I understand that there are only so many geometric symbols. I'm talking about how the symbols have been used today. And I know that throwing this thing in about Jesus being the chief cornerstone is going to confuse some people, and I'm doing that purposely to at least enlighten people that there's more to the Bible than meets the eye, there's more to Christianity than meets the eye, and there is more to occult symbols than meet the eye. These things I know of in the ancient history, but I'm talking about our day.
All right. We're going to do a timeout. We'll come right back. At 27 after the hour, we're back, and let's go right back to those phones. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yes, what can you tell me about the Thulean or Thulean society?
Yes, the Thulean society or the Thule society was a secret society, and the name Thule is based on the Egyptian god Thulis, or the god of the light, or god of holders of the light. As Prometheus in the Roman world was the holder of the light. And as I said, the Statue of Liberty is holding the torch of enlightenment. The Thule Society was a German Nazi order. It actually wasn't Nazi, but Nazism came out of the Thule Society. It was connected to an organization called the Germanian Brotherhood, or the German Brotherhood. As I said, Thule comes from Thulis, the Egyptian god of light, or the sun. And it had to do with enlightenment. It had to do with spiritual enlightenment. Now, someone said in the New Testament, I'm being facetious, Jesus said in the New Testament that if you say that you are in the light, but in fact you are in the darkness, then how dark your light really is. The implication is that there would be people who would say that they were enlightened, that they were in the light, or holders of the light. But the fact of the matter is that these people are actually holders of darkness. And if, as he said, if your light is in fact darkness, then how dark your light really is. In other words, if you say you're in the light and you're not in the light, but you're teaching darkness, then you are really in the dark. You're seriously in trouble. So this Thule Society, Adolf Hitler joined the Thule Society. There were about 10 different people involved in founding this order in Germany, and it later became one of the most powerful secret societies operating in Germany. I have about 7 different reference books on that one subject of occultism and Nazism. You're probably aware of most of them. I have about 5 different television programs that were produced in Berlin on that subject. And it's a fascinating subject of the symbols and emblems. Of course, the Nazi swastika comes from the old, the Buddhist symbol for the sun, or actually goes even further back past Buddhism, back to the old Aryan symbol for the sun moving across the sky. That's why its broken legs was moving across the sky. Hitler turned the legs the opposite way and inverted the movement of the sun backwards because of the something called the Saturnalian Brotherhood, who were called the Black Sun because they reversed the light and made it the dark light. It has to do with the Black Sun. So this dual society comes from an old German order, an occult order of Freemasons.
All right.
Where does the myth come from that they're actually living underground, or is it a myth at all?
Well, I think that, you know, because there's been so much discussion about underground civilizations and UFOs underground, I find that kind of difficult. I'm not saying it isn't true. I just find it difficult. But of course, anytime you're working in secret in a secret society, it's said to be an underground organization.
The reason I'm asking is because in the Bible, there seems to be a remnant of Cain, Cainites.
Yes, now, I understand.
If it says everything on the earth was wiped out. But what about people under the earth that had a remnant? I mean, is there a possibility? The reason I'm asking, this is far-fetched maybe, but Cain was referred to being a Rothschild.
Yes, I know that.
And I mean, it's not coincidence that these people have the name Rothschild.
Well, I know. And let me take this opportunity at this moment to tell you this.
Listen off the air, please, caller. Thank you. Go ahead, John.
The Bible is, I believe, that both the Old and New Testament. Now, Jewish scholars will tell you, I don't have to tell you this, any good rabbi will tell you, that the Old Testament is miserably misunderstood by most of the world, because unless you are well-versed in the Kabbalistic Hebrew and Semitic philosophy, you really don't understand the true deep meanings of the philosophy in the Old Testament. I believe the same thing is true in the New Testament. I think there is a profound amount of things which are being said in the New Testament we have not even come to begin to appreciate. Why Jesus is called a chief cornerstone, that the builders, and the builders were, of course, those who built with stone. Jesus is referred to as having a father who was a carpenter, the carpenter's son. The fact of the matter is that was a mistranslation. And never in the scripture does it say Jesus' father was a carpenter. The word in Greek was, and the word in Aramaic, was a master craftsman. He was a master craftsman. Jesus is the chief cornerstone. I'm talking about something very serious here. It has to do with occult societies, and I believe that there is more to this New Testament than what meets the eye, and I think that people need to understand, and I cannot get into the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
The arguments that were given before by that older gentleman that called were completely correct. I totally agree with him, but I'm saying there's more to the story than just the outward symbols themselves.
All right,
meaning to these things.
Well, we're going to have to get you over here and have quite a get-together. I've got one for you before we go to the next call. Pretty much everyone understands the symbol of the cross and its origin. What about the Jewish star?
Yeah, the Jewish star, in fact, is called... And now, it just so happens that I have in front of me, from the Archives Orientali, published in 1953... in Czechoslovakia, a 25-page reference work on the Star of David. And it's called The Origin and Significance of the Magan David. It's found at UCLA, and it took me about a week to find the thing. And it goes into the Star of David. The Star of David goes all the way back to the old Aryans. The ancient Aryans used the six-pointed hexagram. It was referred to as the hex. They would draw the triangle on the ground and then an inverted triangle crossing it, and they said that they put the hex on you, and that was a six-pointed hexagram that goes back to the old Aryan or Hindu symbol for the sun. Later on, the swastika comes into use in the old Aryan Hindu symbol for the sun. So it has to do with God's sun, the terminology, the symbols. It has to do with the Messiah. These symbols are very interesting and very occult or hidden. So okay. I could send anyone who is interested, I could send a photocopy of this 25-page document on the Star of David coming from the old Czechoslovakian Institute. A very interesting article.
Well, you have papers of all kinds that
I've seen. I had at one time almost 100 large bank boxes, the legal sized bank boxes, stashed in my garage and other people's garages, filled with documents, letters, pictures, research material, personal letters from all over the world. I work with people behind the scenes getting material and sharing research for 35 years. Yes, I have tons of material.
All right, and if anyone wanted to be in touch with you, can I give your address?
Yes, as a matter of fact, it's Jordan Maxwell or RJT. That's a company that I use to produce tapes and materials. RJP or Jordan Maxwell.
Okay.
P.O. Box 7442. P.O. Box 7442. Burbank, California. 91510.
Okay, and if anyone is driving around and didn't get a chance to write that down, I'll keep it, and you give me a call on my voicemail, I'll get it to you. Jordan, we got to do a timeout. We'll
That's
come back.
All right.
We'll go back to the phone.
Okay.
Okay, here we are. We're back again. Let's go right back to those phones for your questions, your comments. Good morning. You're on the air with Jordan Maxwell. Hello, caller. Okay. And yes, good morning.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Hi. I was curious about what you thought about the books and ideas of Robert Anton Wilson.
Robert Anton Wilson, I know. He's a very interesting and intelligent man and very well-informed. He only tells you half of what he knows. I've talked with him before. He's a very interesting man. I think I have probably everything he's written. And I find him to be very interesting and very informative.
Okay.
Yeah, so do I. He's going to be speaking in Salt Lake City at the Libertarian Convention next week.
Oh, I would love to be there. I'd love to talk.
Thank you.
Thank you, caller. Okay, and good there we go. Good morning.
Good morning, Lou. This is Jerry.
Yes, Jerry.
How are you?
Great, thanks.
Jordan, nice to hear from you.
Nice to hear from you, sir.
I'm most interested in what you've said in the last two visits you've made, being a temple-married Mormon and a 32nd degree adept.
Yes.
In the house of Stewart.
Yes.
I'm rather interested in what's going on. I have made the acquaintance lately of a fellow by the name of LeBaron. You recognize the name?
Not offhand, no.
Francis LeBaron was one of those that signed the Mayflower Compact. This fellow is an heir to his lineage. Comes out of the Mormon Mexican colony.
Uh-huh.
He is related, of course, to Sir Francis Bacon.
Mm-hmm.
That is the original Baron.
Oh, yes.
And
Francis Bacon, it's interesting you should bring that name up.
Oh, yes. He's an interesting creature.
Yes, very.
All right, now you've got us all curious. Well, what do you mean?
Well, I'm interested because he could be the father of speculative masonry.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And he's also the writer of the stuff that's given to Shakespeare.
Absolutely. There is a whole school of thought that believes that Shakespeare was not a man, but Shakespeare was the name given to a society of Freemasons in Europe who wrote collectively. And I think there's something to that.
Yes.
And I was going to say that the King James Bible translating committee for the King James Bible had in that translating committee Rosicrucians and Freemasons, and much of what is in the King James Bible was put there purposely, not in the original text, to fit the king and to fit England and to fit the religio-political order that was to come. So there's it's very dangerous to take every single thing in the King James Bible as the Word of God.
Bingo.
Because it's not.
I get this stuff all the time, you see, from my born-again Christian friends who accuse me of being Luciferian by design because of my... my affiliation.
Yeah, nothing could be further from the truth.
Exactly so.
Okay.
Are you familiar with the work of a Russian professor by the name of Nilis who put out an in 1905 something called the...
Oh, the Protocols.
Protocols, the Elders of Zion?
Absolutely, yes.
That's another excellent piece of work. I was curious to know if you might be interested in meeting and talking with this fellow. He says he can put together the entirety of the scriptures within the confines and the surrounding areas of the Arizona Strip and Zion Park.
Well, you know what? I think I've already met him.
Oh, have you?
Is the man living up there in that area?
Indeed.
And I have
in the land of Canaan.
Yes, I have not met the man, but I have a very close friend who went up there and spent 3 or 4 days with him, and videotaped all of it, and it is absolutely phenomenal. What this Elvis.
I thought you might be interested in the information. That's all.
Well, I've already got it, believe me.
Okay.
And I will probably write and communicate with you further. You said your zip code was
91510.
91510.
Again, let me give it to the audience. It's
okay.
Jordan Maxwell, P.O. Box 7442. Burbank, California, 91510.
Okay, thank you, caller.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
You can verify for me the expression hell.
Yeah.
Is Hades.
Yes. No.
Was not Hades a small suburban town, in effect, where people took their refuge to burn it?
Well, Hades actually comes from the word in the Hebrew, Sheol. Sheol comes from the valley of Hinnom, or the valley of Hades, the valley of Hinnom, which was a dump. It was the trash dump.
Mm-hmm.
And like we do sometimes in the world today, trash dumps are set on fire and kept continually on fire. And so the refuse of the city of Jerusalem was dumped over the wall in an area called the Valley of Hinnom. And the Valley of Hinnom was nothing more than a trash dump, and they would burn all the debris to keep diseases down. So the Greek word for that was Hades, or the Valley of Great Fire. And the word hell, actually, H-E-L-L, is a misnomer. The word actually comes from the old Nordic Viking word H-E-L, hell, who was the goddess of the underworld. And they said that when you went under the earth, the goddess hell was with you in the underworld. And that's where we get today the word hell. And the idea for it being hot in hell comes from the concept in Egyptian that the sun at 12 noon was said to be in his father's house, or the great heavens. He was very hot. And so when the sun went down, they said God's sun went down into hell, or down into the underworld. And obviously, if it was very hot at noon, it must be very hot down there. So out of that concept came the idea that hell is hot and that it's an underworld. Actually, it goes back to the goddess of the Vikings, H-E-L, from which we get Helena. And so anyway, I mean, that's a whole different story, and I'd love to take 8 hours of going into astral theology and the theology of the ancient world and how it connects to ours today.
The origin of some of the words we use and the symbols. All right, let's do a quick timeout, and then we'll come right back. Okay, we're back. Let me ask you something, Jordan. Have you ever read the Geneva Bible?
I have a copy of it right here in front of me. I'm looking at it, yes. The Geneva Bible. It's a very... It's a very interesting Bible, and it gives you a lot of material and clarification on scriptures that are in the King James that you'll see that are not in the Geneva.
All right.
And there's a lot of terms in the Bible, and especially in the Old Testament, well, the Old and New both, that people just generally don't understand. Like, for instance, I'll give you a quick one. Genesis 9:1 says that Noah, coming out of the ark after God had destroyed the world with the great flood, it says God said to Noah, "Go forth into the world, multiply and replenish the earth." And the word in the is a correct word meaning replenish. Re, of course, means to do again, to replenish. And so Noah was told to replenish the earth. Well, that makes sense if God destroyed the earth and Noah is told to replenish the earth or redo it again. But that's the same word that Adam and Eve are given in Genesis 2, where it says, go forth to the world and multiply and replenish the earth. And the word replenish means to do again. So was there a world here before Adam and Eve were told to replenish? replenish the earth. That's what the word is in Hebrew. That's what the word is in the Bible, implying that Adam and Eve were not the first creation of God, but they were told to redo the earth. So I'm telling you that there is a enormous stories in the Bible, and the implications are horrendous.
And for those who may not be aware of the Geneva Bible, it is that which preceded the King James Version.
Yes. Now, I am so very happy to be with you on the program, and I love the people who are hearing, but I'm going to take the opportunity for the moment to say a few things that I want to say.
All right.
I have been asked many times, how is it that you come by having this kind of knowledge, and how is it you've been able to amass such enormous amount of material? The way that happens is I have spent my whole life doing it. That's why I have what I have, and I love to share it with anyone. But the problem is that when you do such things as devote your life to the subject and spend all of your time, you're not out there in the business world doing business. You're an artist and you're doing your craft or working your work,
mm-hmm.
and consequently you end up like all craftsmen. Because like most people who are dedicated to something, they end up broke because they have spent their whole time doing nothing but their work. And that's why artists in the Middle Ages always had people who financed them. I'm asking for anyone who hears me to help me, because I have no job and I've given everything I had to this work, and I am not able to really get out except for people like you, Lou, who allow me the time to be on the air. I am not able to get out there really, to do what I want to do on a large scale, because I really don't have the funds to do anything. And I've lost just about everything doing what I do, but I am determined to stay with this because I believe this is the most important story we have in this country today. And somewhere, somehow, someone is going to come to help. And so anybody that wishes to help me in this, and anyone that can do more than just a little help, I would ask you to call. And we can talk, because I have an enormous amount of material to share with the world and with anyone who wishes. Again, I'll give my phone number to just leave a message if you wish, and I'll get back to you. And that's 818-769-1071, 769-1071. And if you want to write me, it's P.O. Box 7442 Burbank, California 91510. I am in desperate need of help, because I'm by myself. I only have a couple of people who are helping me to stay alive, and we need to have some support to get this material out, because I believe it's the most important story, and no lie can live forever. Somewhere along the line, this material and this knowledge is going to come out, and I think it is now time, and all I'm asking is for help.
Absolutely. And we're going to try and get you over here to Las Vegas within the next month or very, very quickly.
I would certainly love that.
All right, and we'll help in every way we can. Let's go back to the phone. Good morning.
Hello? Hello?
Yes, go ahead, caller.
Yes, I don't want to spend much time on this, but it could have been the flora aspect of saying refurbish, because or replenish, as you say, because I'm sure some of the flowers and the grass and the leaves are dying off. But God is not inconspicuous, so therefore He would be responsible, and He would tell these people that we're supposedly the first people on the face of the earth.
Yeah.
I don't know if you agree with me or not.
All right, listen off the air, please, caller. Go ahead,
what?
Jordan.
Well, let me ask you to do something. Repeat that again, please.
I'm sorry, he's gone. He was referring regarding the word replenish, meaning
yes.
possibly to replenish the flora, the fauna that existed prior, as opposed to...
Well, why would he be telling humans to reproduce and multiply and replenish the earth? He's talking to humans, not pot plants.
Okay.
Anyway... Excuse me. No, the implication in the Hebrew is that God was talking to Adam and Eve, a man and a woman, not to pot plants.
No, but I think the caller made reference that he was telling Adam and Eve to bring back the garden.
Well, bring it back? You mean it was here before?
Well, that was the implication.
Yeah,
possibly.
Right.
Let's see who's on the next line.
Yeah.
And good morning.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Are you talking to me, please?
Yes, go ahead,
okay.
Please.
I've never called you before, so I'm calling you. Please help me. I just want to make an
make a statement. One thing this man knows exactly what he's talking about. I want to know if you had ever read the book called En Route to Global One World Order by Gary Kahn. And it takes you back exactly to where this beginning is. It goes back to Nimrod.
En Route to Global...
Well, Global, well, One World Order.
Okay.
By Gary, G-A-R-R-Y-K-A-H-K-A-H.
I have the book.
He is a government worker.
Okay.
And he
actually yes, well, Jordan says, yes, he has the book and he has read it.
Yes.
Oh, then he knows there's an article in there about exactly what he's taught in the Freemasons that their highest order. It is set up for the worship of Satan. And all this is coming to pass now.
All right, Colin. Thank you. Go ahead, Jordan.
Yes, let me say to the audience, because we only have a few moments left.
Yes.
I gave my number, which is an office number only. It's an answering machine only, and that was 818-769-1071.
Mm-hmm.
But I will be here for a few hours if they wish to call me immediately at a different number, and that's 818 is 347-8149.
8149.
Right.
Okay.
347-8149, if they wish to contact me immediately. If not, then leave a message on 818 area 769-1071.
All right, we've got to do one more timeout. There we are, everyone. We'll be right back. Okay, and we're back, but we're running smack out of time. Jordan, do you have any final comments?
Yes, I would love to come to Las Vegas, but I have the problem is that I have so much to bring with me. I would love to do that. Why don't you do whatever you can to set it up and get back to me, or I'll get back to you, because I think that would be the thing to do. We need to be able to show people this rather than just tell them.
Over 35 years in research, it's really been a calling for you ever since you were a youngster, hasn't it?
Yes, it has certainly been, and it has cost me dearly. It has cost me my marriage, my job, and virtually everything else. I own nothing now, and it has cost me dearly. But it is a very priceless treasure to know these kind of things, but it costs time and money to do it, and that's why I'm asking for support.
Jordan, was it worth it?
I think so, yes.
Okay, again, I want to thank you. We are going to have you back. We will get you over to Las Vegas, and we'll get you some help.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us. Again, the information, absolutely outstanding. And the thing I respect is everything you have said is documented, that anyone can go to a library and verify for themselves. It's not, trust me, believe what I'm saying on blind faith. It's all there.
Absolutely.
You take good care, and again, we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Thanks to all of you for being with us today. Have as good of a day as you can. Lou Epton here saying we'll see you tomorrow morning, same time, same place.